Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? Success Leaves Footprints, and I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Many times the footprints that we talk about are concealed, and they fall into broad categories of information that is concealed. This is why most of us have not received much history on blacks in America or anywhere else for that concern, because it goes back to the days of slavery and even beyond. Painted a picture, and I said we, because I am an American citizen, we paint a picture that is grossly unfair. What's unfair about this picture? It leaves black achievement out. It leaves those areas of great conflict where many people of European extraction did not act in a very civilized manner. And we'll talk about one of those incidences today. I want you to be aware of this, because in February we're going to look at 28 more instances where this has happened, and I think it will be an eye-opening experience for most of you. Most of us are joining by way of the computer link. Even if you're on your phone, if you're using the computer link, I cannot see you on my dashboard. In order to see and interact with you on the dashboard, you need to call in. The number is 646-668-8217. Broadcast will be the same whether no matter how you connect. The difference is I will not be able to see you open your microphone so that you can pose any questions or suggestions or difficulties that you may have with something that I've said. You may want to enhance it. You may want to ask questions about something that is not our primary topic today. And that's perfectly okay, because what we're trying to do is get out the facts that should have been included in our history books. They should have been included. It doesn't just happen to people of African heritage. It's happened to many other people. For example, when we talk about the Transcontinental Railroad being laid, most of the work was done by Chinese immigrants. And they performed the backbreaking task many times of tunneling through mountains and doing other hard and dangerous jobs. Yet when we look at the photo of the people that completed it, they're all white. They're all white because they stepped in to take the credit for it. And we have many instances like this. This is unfair to those people that, you know, suffered injury and even loss of life to build something. What is wrong with that? I think we've come up with a mentality that says if anybody else did something, it takes away from the majority population, which I don't feel is true. I think it shows that we are a team, a very diverse team. We often see and pay tribute to Emma Lazarus and her declaration on the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, without paying attention to the line directly above it, which says, you keep your best and send us the rest. Not those exact words, but that's the sentiment there. You keep them. We will take people here. We will make them great. We have not been true to that because we have not shared what other people have done. And in many cases, it is amazing. What you looking for, the phone? Here it is here. It needs to be plugged in, and I think the plug-in is not plugged in. Okay. Sorry about that. But we see that happening. When Europeans first came to America, they didn't own an inch of land. The Europeans did not own an inch of land. They encroached. They made treaties. They didn't follow through. They didn't honor their word. And again, much of this is deleted from history of never having been put in there in the first place. So we see shameful conduct as not being a part of the story. In order to benefit from history, above all, it must be correct. We are trying to learn something from something that's fallacious, and that doesn't work well. This is why we still have problems festering today, because we have fallen for these rumors, myths, what have you, half-truths, zero-truths, and many made-up myths that are thrown in along the way, generally to justify the treatment that we have given the many groups that are in America today. There have been times when other people have been subjected to similar things. We have the Irish, we have the Italians, we have other people of European extraction that were at some point in time put down by the majority of the white population here. Again, this is shameful, and many of us are unaware of it. I'll have to confess that as I came through the middle grades, junior high school, college, history was not my bag. It was not something that I looked forward to. Book I had, and I had to take this thing around with me, and I didn't see anybody that looked like me, at least not fulfilling a positive role model. For that reason, I didn't enjoy it, and it came down to nothing but a bunch of dates, a bunch of names, and again, that didn't do anything for me. These were often people in a bygone era, and while I did not realize it at the time, most of the information being given was not factual. It was a fictionalized presentation, a fictionalized interpretation of how things go. When we look at one of the major conflicts in the world, and that was the American Civil War, we find that that is completely distorted, because what we had, it was not a war between the states. It was a war between two countries. We had states that withdrew from the United States. They withdrew and formed a separate country. We had the United States of America, the Union, and we had the Confederated States of America, the Confederacy. And as we look at that, they had a president, a vice president, and a constitution, everything that a government needs to operate. But history is filled with stories of those people being the heroes of the Civil War. Sure, they were fighting for what they believed to be right, and can't fault them for that. But as part of the resolution of the matter, they were to begin treating blacks as citizens. We hear about the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. 13th Amendment freed the slaves, while the Emancipation Proclamation in practice freed slaves in the Confederacy. It was only those that were able to benefit, that were able to cross lines and get to Union troops, who truly were free. Everybody else remained in slavery. In fact, this is the basis of Juneteenth, because even after the war, 2.5 years before the slaves in Texas were notified that they were indeed free. And so this is where the Juneteenth celebration comes from. The first time I heard it, I thought these people made up a name so they would have something to celebrate. But it's a portmanteau, which is a combination of two words, and we use them every day in America. Motel, which is a motor hotel. Brunch, which is a combination of breakfast and lunch. And the list goes on and on and on. But in this case, where we have June and the 19th, Juneteenth, we stand back and think that's something weird. But it is only weird because we don't express what has happened, what's truly affected people in this country. Today, our primary talk is going to be on the Montgomery Improvement Association. Montgomery is a city in Alabama, and they were subjected to all manner of discriminatory practices. For example, the city buses were filled, and this was more than a racial issue. It was a socioeconomic system, because most of them were placed in jobs that did not pay what others did. They were relegated to lower paying jobs, and when they were performing skilled work, they still weren't paid the same as white people. In South Carolina, for example, when my parents started teaching, they made half what white teachers made. They had larger classes and less resources to do it with. And it was people like Septima Clark that fought for equal pay for equal work on the part of the teachers. Those people that had, those students that had become teachers, this was one of the better paying jobs for them. But again, it was half to whites. Why? Because we have had a longstanding relationship with people that said that we're not going to spend what we do on each group of people. What we have been looking for is equality. We've been looking for opportunity. We haven't been looking for welfare. We haven't been looking for handouts. But many of the practices that we have allowed to exist had the effect of depriving people of opportunity, depriving people of the opportunity to gain wealth. In slavery, people were basically denied the opportunity to own land and therefore control their destiny to some extent. When they did have land and wanted to sell their crops, many times whites wouldn't pay for it or pay less or expected to pay less. And this, again, led to cultures that we are never exposed to but had a real bearing. When we talk about sharecropping, that was certainly not done fairly. Because if you were uneducated, you didn't know how to add the numbers, balance the books, and do many of the basic functions. And where you did, you were subject to being thrown off of the facility. And word gets out about what you're capable of doing, you might not find anywhere else to settle, to reside, to seek what is inherently yours. And so it was a brutal system. It was a brutal system. We go back to Montgomery. And what's happening there? Most of the bus riders are black, but they are treated definitely as second-class citizens. There are usually two doors on a bus, city bus particularly, where you can go in the front door. You could. What they were requiring is the blacks went into the front door. You couldn't walk to the back of the bus. You had to step out of the bus, off of the bus, and go into the back there were drivers who would accept your money and then pull off as you were going to the back door. There were times when, because of the segregation laws, you had to stand up to make room for a white person. And in many cases, this involved up to four people. Why four people? Because you couldn't sit on the same row as a white person. So if there were open seats on the bus and white passenger chose to sit in that row, four people had to get up and move. And in some cases, there were no seats available for them. They didn't get a refund on what they had paid for. They were treated disrespectfully by the drivers. They were treated disrespectfully by police who may be called. And the drivers had some police powers in terms of arresting people. So it was a horrible, horrible situation. People were tired of it. And there were organizations that had been put together for the purpose of fighting these barbaric, well, they're not barbaric, but outdated procedures. Yes, they were very, very outdated. We see pictures of water coolers, whereas the whites have refrigerated water, cold water on a hot day. Blacks didn't have that. It was room temperature water out of a bubbler at best. And in some cases, there was nothing. Same with restrooms. Some places did not have restrooms for blacks. And as inhumane as this sounds, that was the status quo in the South. In some cases, beyond there, people would board a train, be comfortably seated according to the laws of those states, and would get to a certain point and had to get up and move to separate cars. When we talk about Harriet Tubman, we must realize that she had her arm broken when she was traveling on a, excuse me, United States government pass and was seated in a car. The conductor told her that we don't carry black people at the freight. Get up and get off of this, out of this car. And she refused. The conductor, and he solicited three people to aid him, physically threw her off the train, breaking her arm. Harriet Tubman was not the biggest person in the world. And to be treated like that was considered the norm. When we have Elizabeth Jenkins, who in, I believe it was around 1850, in New York City, in her church finery, going to play as an organist, she and one of her better friends boarded a streetcar. Again, they were physically thrown off the streetcar. What we don't hear is that she was defended. She took the case to court. Incidentally, her father, Thomas Jennings, excuse me, but I have had a medical procedure. It does not have to do with the cough, but it's a bit uncomfortable. But we're going to try to push through and get the broadcast done. So if I sometimes have to interrupt it, please understand and bear with me as we do this. But her father, Thomas Jennings, invented dry cleaning, much as we use today. And she was thrown off of the streetcar. They were fortunately able to hire an attorney a guy by the name of Chester A. Arthur, who I believe was our 19th president of the United States, who won that particular case. So they don't want people to know that there were cases in which people were awarded monies for injustices, because it's something that we may end up doing. You know, other people may seek to follow suit. We realize that if you were freed in the South, that you had a year to get out of town, or you were subject, re-enslaved for the remainder of your life. This certainly does not seem fair, but they didn't want people to see that there was a difference between slavery and freedom. Slavery and freedom. And so we manipulated the books. We took all references like that out. And so Martin Luther King was nominated, and we sometimes don't realize how close we are to history. We don't realize how close we are to history. I attended a HBCU, Historical Black College and University, by the name of Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina. And while there, our dean of students was a gentleman by the name of Reverend Edgar Nathaniel French. I didn't realize that that was a contact to history. Why? Because he had nominated Dr. King to head the Montgomery Improvement Association. Now, Martin Luther King was fairly new in Montgomery, and he did not have the long history and the long list of enemies that some of the other people had, because they were fighting for equality. They were fighting for justice. They were fighting for the right to be treated fairly as any other American citizen. He didn't have it. But what he did, and I think it's remarkable because I'm going to talk about this, is that he allowed himself to take the position. And what's so good about that? Martin Luther King was very young. In fact, he was only 39 when he was felled by an assassin's bullet. 39 years old. And yet he has made an impression on the world. The things that people use today as a reason not to leadership role, he didn't. He understood that he had the herewithal. He had the ability to study. He had the ability to think. He had the ability to apply. Now, he didn't go into a vacuum. It was not a vacuum that he entered, because there were people that were there ahead of him who were equally as frustrated by the situation as were the newcomers. Those people that were basically silent. And so he became a voice for those people. But he studied. He did what was necessary and understood that when the student is ready, teacher will appear. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And the teacher did appear for him. Sometimes it was in the form of fellows in the movement, sometimes others. But he was basically given everything that he needed. And he had the forethought to stand there. He was arrested many times during his lifetime, standing up for justice. He called himself the drum major for justice. Drum major for justice. The drum major leads the the band, particularly in outdoor events, marching events, and what have you. And he sets the pace, basically, so to speak. He sets the mood. He sets so many things in motion. But he would be nothing if he did not have followers. Martin Luther King was able to have followers. And he did so by calling on leaders in other roles and working with them. Notice I said working with them, because this is not a one-man operation. Sometimes you have to listen to other people. Sometimes they have great, great ideas and suggestions because they have been thinking about this for quite some time. But in many situations, we have people that could be leaders, but for some reason they shy away from it. I don't know if it's because they think that at some point in time they will be criticized, because you will. I don't care how good a job you're doing, you're going to have critical comments made about you. We look at the President of the United States. This one certainly receives those types of messages, as did the last one, and the one before that, and the one before that, and the one before that. But you have to lead based on your moral judgments, what you feel is right, in connection with those that are helping you. When the Montgomery boycott was started, there were people that worked all night putting together posters and everything else, informing the people that the boycott was going to start. And it started. It was going to be a one-day boycott. I think it turned out at 381 or 82 days. But this is because it was so successful in the beginning. And it wasn't a matter of whatever the bus fare was. It was a matter of human dignity, being treated like human beings. We had white drivers that were surly. And, you know, sometimes I remember being on the bus and the driver taking off and you basically running through the bus as he's accelerating rapidly from the stop. These types of things had to stop. They were safety concerns. And what we have to consider is the fact that Martin Luther King stepped into a situation in which there were already leaders playing vital roles. They ran mimeograph machines, and some of you may or may not be old enough to know what a mimeograph, but it often had this purple ink, and you had to make a master, and you had to run it and run it and run it and run it and run it. Each time you cranked through the machine, you produced one copy. And this was work, and they worked all night to get thousands of these brochures out, thousands. So while they were doing that, Martin was setting up, and this is so much like the president of an organization. The reason that I say president is because we have first-line supervisors who are down on the floor making sure that the product is made or the service delivered. We have middle management, and then we have upper management, which includes the president. And so what we have to do, or what we expect that person to do, that person in the leadership position, is to tell us what we need to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now, in order to remain on top. We've often used this example of Montgomery Ward, Sears Roebuck, J.C. Penney. They were at the top of the mountain, but they somehow lost track of what was happening. They had a successful model. They didn't see many of the technological changes coming along in time to take full advantage of them, and so they lost their place on the mountain. Martin Luther King sometimes lost ground, but he spoke on what he considered to be the important issues of the day. There were people that did not want him to go to Memphis, but he thought the payment of trash collectors, garbage collectors, whatever you want to call it, was a primary source, a primary issue. We needed to treat these people with respect. And in doing so, he went there. And this spelled doom for him. James Earl Ray, I believe, is the person suspected of having killed him. And again, he was only 39 years of age. How many of you have had the opportunity to lead an organization or to lead something and could have done it, but you declined the opportunity for some reason, any reason? Most of the times they are not totally valid reasons. but he didn't turn that down. But there were women that were involved in the movement. There were men involved in the movement. And they were good fighters. But Martin Luther King was that unique talent that came in. And I'm telling you this because I want many of you to reevaluate yourself. Could you be a leader? Could you be a business owner? There are so many parallels between those two that we spend a lot of time talking about them. And we sometimes don't see the uniqueness. A person that can run a gang can run a business because there's so many parallels there. But they are facing the possibility of being prosecuted. And quite frankly, most of the time it doesn't come out to be worth the effort that you put into it. So we have to consider all of these things. Now, again, I'm going to give you this number because I don't have anybody called in at the present time. We'll open mics if there are people available to do so. Those of you that are listening can continue to listen. But if you want to interact with us, you need to call this number. I'm not sure that I'm going to make it to the end of the 90 minutes that we have allotted for the program. And so, therefore, you need to get my attention earlier. I love talking with people because it gives me an idea of what they feel that we're giving them. Is it what you want, what you need? Are there changes that can be made? Do you disagree with what's going on? That number, again, is 646-668-8217. Again, if you don't have anything to say, continue to listen to us on your device. But if you want to interact with us, then the number is the one to call. So we are speaking of Martin Luther King. We're speaking of the Montgomery Improvement Association. And I want to go back to that part where we're talking about HBCUs. HBCUs, many times we look at them as if they are second-class operations. And this is not the case because those schools are accredited, and they're accredited with the same standards that any other school is bound to meet. How did they come about? They came about because many institutions would not accept black people. This is the United States of America, and we have had a long history of not being able to get in to institutions because of the color of our skin. When we look at one of the most famous people in terms of black history, George Washington Carver, when he was finally able to go, in fact, the first school that he applied to gave him a scholarship. When they got there and found out that he was black, they withdrew it. He was going to give up. Somebody told him about a different college. He applied, went there. While he was there, he was advised that he might want to go to Iowa State. He went there, but he was not allowed to eat in the cafeteria, again, because of the color of his skin. And so what we find is that one of the people that had encouraged him to attend, to see him, because George was a prolific letter writer, he talked to people, he wrote them, and he was telling this lady that was the situation. So she dressed well. She went to the institution and said she wanted to have lunch with George Washington Carver. They said that he doesn't eat in the cafeteria. He has to eat in the kitchen. She said, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. That simple act ended up making George Washington Carver, or allowing George Washington Carver, to eat in the cafeteria with the rest of the students. Sometimes we have people, and we can't go back and change our history. I'm not asking anybody to go back and change our history. I am asking people to include our history in everything that's going on. And so by leaving these stories out, we sometimes don't see the difficult tasks that people have to go through. In fact, when George Washington Carver went to Tuskegee Institute, he did so at a pay loss. But he went there because he could pay back to people that needed his assistance. This is the same way that Martin Luther King had performed. He was an excellent scholar, an excellent minister, and could have gone other places, but he did not. So he became a leader. I'm not telling you that you have to take a lower-paying job, but I'm telling you, don't turn your back on who you are, where you came from. Don't do that. It is not fair necessarily to you. It's not necessarily fair to the people that you're representing. And I know there are many people that have given up lucrative jobs to do something that they enjoyed doing. Martin Luther King got the prestigious Nobel Prize due to his work. Not what he could have done, but what he did do. And so this is one of the matters that we have to be very cautious of. We have to be concerned about. Everybody's not going to do it. But there are many people that are shying away from doing it for whatever reason they can come up with. Whatever reason that they can come up with. So don't put yourself in that particular boat. Do what you feel you're led to do. Many times it results in success above and beyond anything that you expected. So this is where we are, my friends. Some of the women, some of the men that were involved in the movement had very critical roles. And they participated, and they participated willingly. Are you one of the people that could have that influence, but you're afraid? Afraid may not be the correct word, but there are so many instances and times. And sometimes it gets down to having to make choices. Do I give up this for that? Sometimes you can't do both. Sometimes you can. That's a decision that you will have to make. You have to make that decision. And you have to look at it. You have to use your best judgment. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm winding down here. Again, I'll give you the number to call in, but I don't think that I'm going to be able to make it much beyond where we are now. I hope that I have given you some thought material. And again, what we do is on Thursday, AmazingBlackHistory.com has a post. That post is usually the featured topic for the week's discussion. And in this case, it was Martin Luther King and the Montgomery Improvement Association. As we look back at it, I want to mention one other thing. Rosa Parks is the person or is the case that they took. But as we talked about in the case of Elizabeth Jennings, as we talked about in, maybe we didn't talk about them, but for Sarah Mae Fleming in South Carolina, who was assaulted by a bus driver and had to seek hospital treatment. Claudette Colvin, who in Montgomery, several months ahead of Rosa Parks, was arrested for the same thing. But the difference in them is because in law, unfairly so, prosecutors have a tendency to put the victim on trial, rather than looking at the facts. It's not a whole system. But that brings up a point that you need to consider very, very strongly. And that is that as we consider what's taking place, there are positions, there are voting opportunities that come up that we need to anticipate, we need to participate in, because many cases, we saw the case of George Floyd. That case was about to be swept under the rug because most of our prosecuting attorneys said no, like in Ahmaud Arbery. No, nothing here. In fact, there was collusion on the part of the prosecuting attorney. We need to be responsible when we make our choices. We need to know what these people are, who they are, and what they are responsible for. And in some cases, we need to have our own candidates run. And how do we do that? We become involved. Martin Luther King became involved, whereas other people would have used all manner of excuses. He didn't. He accepted it. He knew who made him. He knew that we were great people. And this is another reason that I think our Black history is so, so, so important. Because many of us are listening over a system that uses VOIP. VOIP is Voice Over Internet Protocol. And while we have MP3s and MP4s and what have you, this allows you to make phone calls over the Internet. Excuse me. And it gives us the opportunity for programs like Zoom, Ring Central, whatever, to operate. And when we look at Dr. Marion Rogers Croak, C-R-O-A-K, I think that was last week's deal, she is credited with being the inventor of the process. And she had some challenges as she was going on because people were looking at other possibilities. But in the field of VOIP, this black lady, who is now currently a vice president at Google, has over 100 patents in the area of VOIP. In total, she has over 200 patents. Is that something that comes from an inferior race? No. It is not. We have taken a back seat because we don't know these things about our heroes. We don't know these things about our history. And we need to, so that we can use the influence. We get into an argument and people say, well, what have you done? And you can't think of a blessed thing that we have ever done. Next month, in February, we're going to post for 28 straight days, and we're going to post on, obstacles that have been placed in the path of black people. These are eye-opening events. You don't want to miss them. We'll have a introductory page, and it will be updated daily so that you can follow 28 days. And we're going to follow that up in March with 31 black females that we should all know. 31. And they are there every day. They have been instrumental. They have been critical in our knowledge, in our struggle. Many times we think that they can't play a vital role. But yes, they can. Yes, you can, no matter who you are. You don't have to be black in order to participate in equality of all people. Because we don't know this history, we have a number of white people going around with baggage that they don't need to carry. And what do I mean by baggage that they don't need to carry? There are people that subjected themselves and their families to much of the same horrors of racism that we see in everyday life. Because we don't know our history, we think that every white person came from a slave-owning relative. And this is not true, because those people that owned slaves made up about 2% of the population. But they tricked white people just like they did black people. When the Civil War broke out, the war that was for the purpose of ensuring slavery in America, and Lincoln's fight was not one way or the other. If he could have made the United States of America all one, he would have done it, whether that be slave or whether that be free. Because he said a house divided cannot stand. And for a while it did not. But when it reformed, there were agreements made that ensured black people full citizenship. It was a period called Reconstruction. What happened to Reconstruction? Rutherford B. Hayes did not win the popular vote. He won it in the Electoral College, and he made deals in the Electoral College that said, if I am appointed, I will take troops out of the South. What were the troops there for? They were there to ensure that there were free and fair elections. Free and fair elections. And we're going to talk about many of these during February. Because I've just looked at the Hamburg Massacre, which took place in South Carolina. There are massacres that took place all over the United States of America, and the purpose of them was to prevent blacks from voting. Now, we see a juxtaposition of current-day principles, because most black people today vote Democratic. In those days, they voted Republican, and there was a swing, pendulum swing, and we had most people at that time who were the Republicans, the party of Lincoln, was in favor of civil rights. Today, not so much. But you have to make your decisions based on the individuals as you see them. Excuse me, we should not have a single party that we represent or that represents us. Because on one side, we're not being heard. So we do this. But Martin Luther King was a young man who stepped up and filled a position. We talk about in the Bible. So the young person will lead them. Could that be you? And I'm not basing this entirely on age. I'm not basing this entirely on age. It may be that you're just new to the game. I'm going to open the mic, see if we've got any questions or comments. I see we do have one cool, one caller. And before I completely lose my voice here, I'll give that person the decision. Marshall, is that you?
Yes, Mr. Abercrombie, this is he. Yes, you know, I was trying to be listening to you this afternoon. Wonderful job you doing on this Dr. Martin Luther King holiday weekend. It is a whole weekend of holidays on in the remembrance of Dr. King. And a lot of us is not saying that. They're just not saying this is what it is. They're saying the holiday, and then some of them are say what it is that we celebrate, but they do not bring up the whole topic, Dr. Martin Luther King holiday weekend. That's what it is. I even heard on the news where there's a, I think the people that buy, has a mattress place where you buy mattresses, and they're saying if you come in and you buy the queen, if you pay the price for the queen mattress, they'll give you a king. I'm the honoring of Dr. Martin Luther King. Get the queen king size at the price of the queen. I said, now that's awful nice if they're doing it in the right manner. And we just thank you so much for your good work, and get you a break, and get you some water, and kind of clear that up. I have the same problem with singing. Leon and I, we were singing the other week for the association over in Greenville, and I lost my voice the same way, and we were up there singing, so I know exactly what you're doing. I had to tone down as much as I could that, you know, that we could continue on and not have to stop, because that is something that happens, and you really have no control of it. So I know exactly what you're going through. Just take you a little break there, get you some water, and hopefully everything be all right. Yes, we already have you booked up for our Black History program out there at Travel Address Church, where I go to church at, for the 26th of February, the 26th, the fourth Sunday. We'll have like a morning service at 10 o'clock. Then as soon as we finish the morning service at 10 o'clock, we will move right in from the on into the fellowship hall for our dinner and our Black history speakers, the people who has some of their members or their friends or their relatives who has done some Black history thing that's not on record. And it's called A Little Unknown Black History Fact. That's going to be our topic, A Little Unknown Black History Fact. And we have about five people that's going to be speaking from 3 to 5 minutes on who really plays a big part in their life or in your family's life or in your city's life or in your state's life, who made a great impact on you as to Black history. And I think that's a wonderful thing because I know we have some of the richest history, I guess, on earth is our history from what we have gone through. And seemingly some of us don't want to hear, don't want to know, but it is so rich. It's a story that people is waiting to hear. They waiting to hear these stories. But seemingly we not really sharing the story with them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the case. Well, Marshall, I appreciate your comments. I'm going to close
man.
Out because I'm not sure that my voice is going to hang in there any longer.
Yes, Anna. Well, I hope you get better there and get something to work that up there.
I'm pretty sure that it will be. So unless there's anyone in calling in, I'm going to end this episode. And
yes.
Take care of the
Lord to the head man. Yes, sir, and we take care too. Tomorrow we'll be going down to the King's Day at the Dome in Columbia. We'll be leaving at 7:30 in the morning, getting down to the King's Day at the Dome in Columbia. That'll be on the steps of the Capitol here in Columbia. And it'll be 10 o'clock, start at 10 o'clock. So I guess we'll do a little march over to the Dome. And then it should be ended up maybe around 12. We catching the bus out at First Baptist at 7:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
honoring this Dr. Martin Luther King holiday. That's what it is. We should say it. That's what it is. It's a law. It's honor to be here and to speak and say something in the midst of Dr. King. Thank you much.
Okay. I hope everybody has learned something today. I want you to be blessed. I want you to come back in next week because I'll have my voice. We'll have another subject. Yeah. So my friends, be blessed, and thank you for tuning in.
Yes, sir. God bless.
This is, as you know, and I am your host, John C. Be blessed.
Be blessed.